The final two episodes of The Last Dance aired last night, culminating in Michael Jordan's famous game winner against Utah that sealed the 1998 NBA championship. And as we spend this morning recapping the 10-part documentary as a whole, we take a look back at Jordan's unforgettable journey to six NBA championships.
We're entitled to defend what we have until we lose it.
There's drama that summer as to whether they're even going to come back.
Get the team handbook laminated on the front page. Last Dance.
It was the last year we were going to be together. Management had already made that decision.
I wouldn't want to be like Mike. It's an impossible task.
Now, this is not one of those lifestyles that you envy, you know?
People were afraid of him. We were his teammates and we were afraid of him.
That's what I want to do to you.
Yeah, let's not get it wrong. He was an asshole. He was a jerk. But as time goes on, you're like, yeah, he was a hell of a teammate.
We kind of needed that, the bad guy, the tough guy.
I wanted to win, but I wanted them to win and be a part of that as well. It is who I am. That's how I played the game. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way. Break.
Good morning from ESPN Studios in Bristol. I'm Mike Greenberg. This is a special three-hour edition of Get Up in which we will spend most of our 3 hours looking back on the extraordinary 5 weeks that we just spent looking back on the extraordinary career of the man that most people believe is the greatest basketball player that ever lived. Michael Jordan as we had never seen him, Michael Jordan as we remembered him, and last night Michael Jordan one last time as an NBA champion. Absolutely spectacular. My guest list is jam-packed this morning, and let me get it started early. Here we go. Jay Williams and Tim Legler are the first up this morning of what will be a great many. And Legler, you obviously played against Jordan and played through the entire decade of the 90s. But Jay, Will, I'll start with you here. Now that the documentary is finished, let's start as big picture as we can. What is the number one thing you take away from watching these 10 episodes over these last 5 weeks?
I think it's just changed the landscape, Brittany, of how documentaries are actually going to be done. I mean, I don't know how you come back after something like this. And I saw a slew of comments like that last night on social media. It was just, you know, Barack Obama describing Michael Jordan as just this largest cultural force that just has this momentum that is perpetual. It is relentless in its demeanor. And then also David Stern actually put this whole thing into perspective when he said, you know, during that era for Michael Jordan, the NBA was in, you know, 64, 70 countries. And after that era, the NBA was in 215 countries. So just the openness, the willingness for Michael Jordan to go there, to unveil himself, to show you who he was, to show you how his competitive nature reached to every cornerstone of the planet. I think it was one of the most just moving documentaries I think I've ever seen. Ever.
The impact off the floor, the impact on the floor. How about you, Timmy? What's the number one thing you will take away from watching this?
Well, I love the fact that it basically brought Michael Jordan's entire career to modern times and to a younger generation of players that, for the most part, know he's the greatest. He's considered the greatest. I'm sure they've all watched highlights or YouTube videos. This was different. This really made you feel like you were back living it again, watching it at the time. And for me, it just cements why he's considered the greatest of all time. And I looked at those early episodes and what he went through physically and the abuse that he took to finally get to the point where he was able to break through. I think it's a miracle when you watch some of that footage of what he went through against Detroit, what he went through against a team like the Knicks in the mid-90s, that he at no point suffered a catastrophic injury early in his career. And he wasn't just, you know, playing. He was playing 82 games a night, and you knew that he was coming at you, and the rules allowed to a certain extent, you know, that kind of physicality when you were up in the air and what he meant. And I think for me, it cemented why he's considered the greatest of all time, to be able to do what he did statistically and as a winner in an era that was designed to stop you with that level of physicality. For me, that's what stood out the most.
If there's one thing that comes out of last night that I'm sure people will spend the longest time talking about, it's Jordan's reaction to the way that it ended, because this came to an end in the way that sports dynasties usually do not. We are accustomed to seeing these sports dynasties defeated on the floor. Jordan's Bulls did it to the Pistons at one time. And one way or another, we usually see these guys lose. We never saw them lose. And this was Michael Jordan at the very end of these 10 episodes last night talking about his feelings at the fact that once it was over after six, he never got a chance to go for seven.
We could have won seven. I really believe that. We may not have, but man, just not to be able to try, that's something that, you know, I just can't accept for whatever reason. I just can't accept it.
I see that in two different ways. I see it in a small way, which is the basketball way, and then I see it in the larger way, which is the psychological impact of never getting to go for it. Tim, I'll start with you because you were an active player at the time. If Michael Jordan and that team had come back as basically constituted to try and defend that sixth championship, do you think they would have won seven?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And I think there's a mitigating factor that would have really helped them be able to do that. Obviously, at the end of any run, there's going to be fatigue that sets in. There's just mental exhaustion as well as physical. And that's why typically these things break up, or interpersonal relationships cancel it out, whatever it may be. But think about what happened that following summer leading into the next season. You had the lockout. And the lockout basically would have given this team additional time to rest mentally, physically. You would have come back for a shorter season. And if anybody ever needed a shorter season, it's a team that would be going for their fourth straight title. And that's exactly what would have been the remedy. Now, look, San Antonio obviously won the championship in 99, and they were a great team. But the Knicks were a surprise finalist that year in the finals. So I think the path to a seventh certainly was there, and that would have been in place, which would have been exactly what they would have needed to make that happen. A shorter season, more motivation in a shorter period of time, and a lot of rest in the offseason from winning that third straight title.
Now, for those who don't know, and it wasn't really covered in the documentary last night because it ends at the end of the 98 championship, but the lockout followed. It was a 50-game season. And as Tim Legler mentions, a New York Knicks team playing without Patrick Ewing wound up making the NBA Finals that season out of the Eastern Conference. So there's that side of it. And then, Jay, well, how about just psychologically hearing Jordan say he just can't accept the fact that he didn't get a chance to go back out there and try again?
I watching that last night, Greeny, after this whole thing was over, I also went back and I watched his Hall of Fame speech. And it just reminded me of how crazy competitive I became as a little kid by paying attention to all those little things that Michael Jordan did. You know, the cup will always be half full. It will always be half full, and he will always find whatever ancillary content or whatever pieces or things that people say to motivate him. And I think, yeah, that dire desire to be the greatest at everything, even in his Hall of Fame speech, he's like, and people joke around, maybe I'll come back at 50. And people started laughing in the Hall of Fame speech. Green, he said, why are you guys laughing? Why are you guys laughing? Like, he was deadpan serious. And he's a guy who he believes fear is an illusion and that he can accomplish anything. And that mindset ultimately is what reached him to stratospheres that no one can ever imagine, because he was relentless in his approach and he believed he could be the best at whatever he put his mind to. That's the difference maker between Michael Jordan and everybody else.
There's a little part of me that says there's also something that adds to his mystique about the way that it ended. Now, Tim, we never saw that team lose. Again, you were playing in the league at the time and I was covering it. We never saw them get beat. And eventually, if they'd stayed together, someone would have beaten them. Someone eventually always does. There's something about it remaining perfect, about it ending with that hand in the air on that final shot as he followed through, as he described it, on that night where he scored 45 out of his team's 87 points to win his sixth championship. There's something about scripting the perfect ending that I think adds to the legend.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. And I think one of the other things that really stood out to me from this, if you want to sum up what Michael Jordan's all about, I was watching it and, you know, obviously he's got a lot of bravado. He's a very confident man in a lot of the things that he said. But for me, it points out the fact that people who really hate to lose typically don't do a lot of it in their lifetime. And I think Michael Jordan's obsession with not losing, I actually think he hated to lose more than he actually loved to win. I think winning for him was more of a relief, but it was that hatred of not being the best, of not finishing the season on top, is what drove him. And so for me, any year that he would have played, that would have been in Chicago, finishing off that run, I think they would have been the favorite to win it again because of that element of his psyche and personality.
Why do you think, Jay, Will, that just that notion that something about the way it ended perfectly, and yes, he came back and played with Washington, and that felt sort of like a postscript to his career. Let everyone see a few more moments, and there were some good moments in that. But the perfect ending was what we saw at the end last night.
Yeah, there were some great moments. I mean, he busted my head open multiple times in that Washington Wizards jersey. But that's why I said, Greeny, that the glass is always half full. It's, you know, when you're Michael Jordan, it doesn't matter how much you've accomplished. The thing that keeps him going is that he always looks to what's next. And he takes all of his naysayers and he lets that fuel him. You heard him last night talk about, yeah, add more wood to the fire. He wants that. And that's the difference maker between this guy. He would have kept pushing himself to be different each and every day because he was never the hunted. He was always the hunter.
You guys are going to hang out with me all morning long here. We have much more for you. Timmy Legler has a great personal story to tell. Jay Williams will be with us all morning long. We're just getting started as we look back on a remarkable experience for all of us to watch Michael Jordan's greatness. Could he have won a seventh? We'll ask everyone who'll join us this morning. It will be jam-packed. And we do have other things to get to this morning as well, including that fella, Aaron Rodgers, weighing in on the Packers taking his heir in the draft. You'll hear what he said and what we thought of it as we continue. It's a three-hour special. Get up on ESPN.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by Modelo, brewed for those with a fighting spirit. I hope you enjoyed the final of The Last Dance last night. The finale, as a reminder, you can stream all 10 episodes on the ESPN app. After the Bulls won their sixth championship in 1998, the team was split. But could they have won their seventh in 99? Michael Jordan will always think so.
We could have won seven. I really believe that. We may not have, but man, just not to be able to try, that's something that, you know, I just can't accept. For whatever reason, I just can't accept it.
And we will be jam-packed all morning long with guests today, including my buddy Marcus Spears, who jumps in with me here. And we will get to some football news this morning as well. But Swaggu, I want to start with this. We've talked a lot about this. And for those who don't know, Marcus was a basketball player before he played football, loves basketball, and has been a part of a lot of healthy debate on this program over the last few weeks about Michael Jordan. What was your number one takeaway as you watched this thing conclude last night?
Gee, it was magnificent, first of all, and kudos to everybody that was responsible for putting that documentary together. I think it's the best documentary I've ever seen. But I think for me, the takeaway is, first of all, you know, you when you're 15 years old in 98, like I was, you don't really realize the magnitude of what Michael Jordan was or the Chicago Bulls and what it meant in ushering in this era of basketball. And I think it was revealing and telling and hearing David Stern, the late great David Stern, talk about how Jordan ushered in the popularity of basketball. And you understand that now from the continuation of not only shoe sales, but who he is iconically, who he is to the sport of basketball, and revered as the greatest basketball player of all time by the large majority of everybody that pays attention to basketball. But for me, it was able to go behind the scenes and really see the career path, see from the beginning all the way up until obviously the final shot against Russell. So it was magnificent for me to see. And then the stories around it. the evolution, you know, going, I think, Greeny, something that a lot of people didn't talk about is seeing Dennis Rodman's documentary that ESPN was able to do, and then foreshadowing that into the Chicago Bulls and seeing how he acted and the things that he did as well. But when it comes to MJ, man, the argument for the greatest of all time will always be there for me and him and LeBron, but I don't want to spill this moment with LeBron. Michael Jordan was unbelievable, fantastic, the ultimate competitor, and I can really understand when I hear guys that were of age during that era. Now I understand what they say about his competitive nature.
And the competitiveness is one thing. There are a lot of people who are competitive. He was particularly so, but probably not more so than any other person that ever lived. But the combination of that with the mental toughness and confidence is what I've tried to explain to people. Again, he did it so much better than I've tried to do it in the 30 years since I covered him. But when he said, or when it was said of him last night, how can you think about missing a shot you haven't even taken yet? That is, in its own way, I think, one of the more profound statements I've ever heard about sports as it pertains to things beyond sports. Michael Jordan never feared missing a shot he hadn't taken, because in his mind, it was much likelier that if he took it, he was going to make it.
No doubt, G. And when you think about that, I couldn't help but think about when Kobe had his four air balls and how much parallel that story came with MJ talking about you can't think about the ones you missed. But also, Greeny, when you make a lot of them, you ain't worried about missing.
He made more than his share. There's no question. All right, we're going to sneak some football conversation in here this morning as well, because maybe one day we'll get a 30 for 30 on Aaron Rodgers and his time in Green Bay, which may be coming to an end. The Packers quarterback spoke with the media on Friday for the first time since the team traded up to draft his potential replacement in Jordan Love. He was pretty open. Here's what he said.
General reaction at first was surprise, I think, like many people. You know, obviously not going to say that I was, you know, thrilled by the pick necessarily, but I understand the organization is thinking not only about the present, but about the future, and I respect that. I think what it does is just reinforce kind of the adage that you can only control what you can control. And so my, you know, sincere desire to start and finish with the same organization, just as it has with many other players over the years, you know, may not be a reality at this point. And as much as I understand the organization's future outlook and wanting to make sure they're thinking about the team now and down the line, and I respect that. You know, at the same time, I still believe in myself and have a strong desire to play into my 40s. And I'm just not sure how that all works together at this point.
Fascinating. As Dominic Foxworth is with us this morning as well. And I like to listen carefully to the words people choose to use sometimes, Neek. So I wrote down not thrilled, things you can't control, sincere desire, not a reality. Aaron Rodgers sees the writing on the wall, Neek, and he's not pretending otherwise.
Yeah, he's a very smart and practical person, and it showed in the comments that he made right there. I think that everything he said right there was completely honest, and it was fair and true. And it also was, it showed that he was disappointed and a little upset with how things have panned out. He said that he can't say that he was thrilled. That is the nicest way, and we all know this from having parents, when you're out in public, that is the nicest way they could be. That is the same as that dirty look. That's the nicest thing they could say when they really want to say or do something completely different. So I understand where he's coming from. I appreciate that he gave us a little insight, and he's also right. We always kind of ridicule the players in these situations when they just say elsewhere, but I think he just kind of furthered that point where there is no loyalty in sports, and it's reminded who else deserves loyalty more than a guy like Aaron Rodgers, what he's meant to that organization for so long, and then to have them do this on the heels of the same thing that they did to Brett Favre. Like, I'm not mad at them for doing it. It can be justified, but let's also understand that there are people on the other side of these decisions like Aaron Rodgers.
What did you think of it, Marcus?
I love this approach, G, to be honest with you. I love how calm and to your point, the words that he chose to me calculated in his response and very reserved. When you think about what Aaron Rodgers has meant to the Green Bay Packers, he legitimately has carried a franchise on his shoulders for a long time. And there's no problem with that. When you get paid the type of money that Aaron Rodgers has been paid, that's the expectation. But with that being said, when you think about his response and what he just said, it's obviously a quarterback knowing that he's not going to finish his career in a place that he's grown accustomed to and become so familiar with. And for him to already be leaving those little nuggets out there about the team has to look out for their future, I plan on playing well into my 40s, i.e. I won't be here well into my 40s, I think was a great response to what they did in the draft. So where we are now today with Aaron Rodgers is this, G, based on this draft. And this is the part that I get excited about. After this season, after this year, when the games are played and everything is done in the offseason, will the real Aaron Rodgers reveal himself in trying to force himself out of Green Bay? Or is he going to stay in that culture or temperature as long as his contract plays out? That's the most interesting thing to me about this scenario.
And, of course, if you're a fan, quickly, Nick, I just have a few seconds here. How much do you think this impacts them and him on the field this coming season?
Yeah, I think it does impact him. I remember when this first happened, we talked about how Brett Favre had a really good season. That team had a really good season. And then they brought in Aaron Rodgers and suddenly everything's off the rails. I think it's unlikely to believe that you can have such a seismic impact on a team like this and expect them to come out and be in the championship game another year, especially when you don't add the players that people think they need immediately.
All right, we will talk more about this as we go. We're going to sneak in a bunch of other stuff out there, but a lot of the conversation today will be about Last Dance, and we'll let Dominique chime in with his thoughts on it as well. And since the premiere last night, the great debate, of course, has been who's the greatest, MJ or LeBron? The fans have spoken. It wasn't close. You'll hear the results of the poll coming up. Get up, ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Welcome back to Get Up on ESPN, where Get Up and Go is brought to you this morning by Claritin. NASCAR returned to action yesterday for the first time without fans in the Real Heroes 400 at Darlington Raceway in South Carolina. Kevin Harvick pulled away late for his 50th career victory in NASCAR's top series. Meanwhile, live golf was back on TV. A charity skins game raised over $5 million for COVID-19 relief funds. Players carried their own bags. They wore shorts, and Rory McIlroy had the winning shot. He and Dustin Johnson beating Ricky Fowler and Matthew Wolff at Seminole. Soccer back in action in Europe over the weekend with the return of the Bundesliga, Germany's top soccer league. The league had been suspended for more than 2 months due to the pandemic. All games are being played without fans. And a draft of Major League Baseball's health and safety manual obtained by ESPN reveals the league is hoping to process upwards of 10,000 coronavirus tests per week as part of their return to play plans. High fives, hugs, chewing tobacco, and sunflower seeds would be prohibited under the plan. There is hope they'll be back on the fields in July. And then that brings us back to the finale of Last Dance. Last night, a reminder, you can stream all 10 episodes on the ESPN app. The last episode showed the final shot Michael Jordan took in a Bulls uniform to win their 6th championship and their 2nd three-peat. And someone who obviously was watching and is all over it for us all the time is our buddy Brian Windhorst, our NBA insider. Wendy, thanks for getting up early here. What was your biggest takeaway from last night?
I was stunned that they even got the 6th championship. Now that I've seen all the behind the scenes, I know that Jordan left us saying, oh, I wanted to try for 7. I would say to him, Michael, you were lucky to squeeze 6. Dennis Rodman was clearly done. Go look. He played 35 more games in his career. After this, his mind wasn't even there. If Scottie Pippen's contract had been a year shorter, he would have been out of Chicago a year earlier. He was so out of there, clearly didn't want to be there anymore. Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner, was tired of paying so much money he made that clear. And Phil Jackson was ready to leave. And it was even, if you go back in that place and time, looking around at other jobs. So I say congratulations to the Bulls for getting number six. That was your great championship. And I don't think you could have hung around for it any longer anyway.
Now, there's something perfect. I keep trying to make this point. I was very moved as one who obviously remembers all of it as it was happening. I was touched by a lot of things last night. Some of them I thought were somewhat emotional. And the biggest takeaway I come from with is that sometimes when things end that way, it's better. Like we usually get to see teams lose. We usually get to see teams defeated. You see the champion sort of carried off on his shield. But in this way, the last image we have of them was them at the very top, in the very apex. And if there was some sort of a mystique and an aura about that team that doesn't exist for others, that might be part of the reason why.
You could even make an argument that the way this ended saved Jordan a little bit, because if he had tried to come back for year seven, he may not have a perfect record with them. His legacy may not be as perfect in Chicago as it was. And I can just tell you, Greeny, actually, you know, I was in college at this time. I can't relate to it, but I was standing there every single day with the Miami Heat and then the Cleveland Cavaliers and then last year with the Golden State Warriors. At the end of these runs, it's exhausting. The entire team is vaporized. And those all were shorter than the stretch that the Bulls went through here. So having seen that with my own eyes, I know exactly how they were all feeling.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. It starts to become a relief rather than joy when you wind up winning the whole thing, and that's no way to live. Okay, one thing this docuseries has clearly highlighted with fans is the debate over who is the greatest, Michael Jordan and LeBron James. So our Jeremy Schapp polled 600 fans to try to get to the bottom of the answer to that question, and here's what he found.
Michael Jordan versus LeBron James. The eternal debate. Like Michelangelo versus Leonardo, Hemingway versus Fitzgerald, Jay-Z versus Nas. Towering figures in their field. So why can't we just appreciate their genius? Why do we have to compare them? Why must we be so reductive? Well, why not? 600 respondents to our poll waited for age, gender, race, team loyalties, income, but in the end, the balloting wasn't close. If they were writing sonnets, those polled might have put it this way. MJ, you are the greatest. How may we count the ways? Better offensive player? Check. Better defensive player? Check. Better passer? Check. Preferred teammate? Check. Better clutch performer? Check. Choice to take the last shot? Check. More amazing? Check. More likely to win one-on-one? Check. In each of those on-court categories, MJ wins by at least 18 percentage points. In the off-the-court, aesthetic, and footwear categories, also a blowout for Michael Jeffrey Jordan. Positive impact off the court. Better look. Better signature sneaker for style and fashion. Better sneaker for performance. And in the all-important with whom would you prefer to knock back a beer category, again, Michael wins by 30 points. Well, this might be more important. Which player, we asked, do you consider best overall? Jordan wins by a whopping 58 points with the older cohort and by 32 points with the youngsters. Overall, a 46-point win. It's like the 97 Bulls against the 2018 LeBron-less Cavaliers. Similarly, 65% of our Noble 600 chose Michael as the greatest NBA player ever. Only 14% chose LeBron. Bear in mind, there were no respondents under 18. They might prefer LeBron, but they didn't get to vote. Is that fair? No, no one said this was going to be fair. But these are the results. You don't like it? Take it up with the GOAT.
So, there we go. We got Brian Windhorst back with us, and we got Jay Will as well. Wendy, what was your reaction?
Was this poll taken on Michigan Avenue on St. Patrick's Day? If it wasn't a pandemic, I thought that was true. I mean, well, certainly a lot of it you would agree with. A better passer? I mean, just the results on that alone make me want to throw the entire thing out. Better passer? Better teammate? I mean, look, you'd have to ask his teammates, but I don't know of LeBron punching any of his teammates in the eye. And, you know, while certainly Jordan does check off a lot of those boxes, I don't know if this is a fair time to ask that question. LeBron's probably sees this last night and going, why are you dragging me into this under these circumstances? I'll tell you one thing. I'd love to see a one-on-one game because 6'9", 265, that would be interesting to see Jordan guard that.
Jay Will? Thank you, Brian. Thank you. Thank you, Brian. Thank you for that. For somebody who actually gets basketball, watches basketball all the time, understands the footwork, the lateral quickness of LeBron James at 6'9", 245 pounds, how he can move. That was my original point. And I know that he's, you know, Michael Jordan's considered Black Jesus, the Black Cat, and he can move. And defensively, he's great. And offensively, he's so skilled. But going against somebody who is the size of Karl Malone, that has the speed of a guard, that can play like a guard, is off the charts. And you know what, Greeny, like, this brings me to a different point. This is obviously subjective. And Brian, you said, you know, LeBron, like, why bring him into it? Because this is what we do, Brian. This is what we love to do. And my thing with LeBron James is that when everybody tries to use, well, Michael Jordan was 6-0 in the NBA Finals and he wins, I'm like, all right, well, Bill Russell won 11 championships of the 13 years he played. He won 8 in a row. So we're just giving the greatest of all time off of championships, and that's Bill Russell. There's also a lot of other people ranked ahead of Jordan in winning championships. Robert Ory is another one. So I'm not saying that Robert Ory is better than Michael Jordan, but if you're taking that away and then you want to go into shoes, Greeny, or you want to go into a cultural icon, I understand Michael Jordan has that. Like, David Falk was the one that helped Michael Jordan with Brand Jordan, and what they built was phenomenal. Phenomenal. And Michael Jordan also helped catapult the NBA into 214 countries. I understand that. But still, the impact that LeBron James has on the game now, due to the reach that he has, is just different. And this is subjective. I feel like the way LeBron James leads, it puts him in the greatest of all time in my category. For somebody else, you're allowed to have that, and that's totally fine, but it's subjective.
Wendy, positive impact off the court. That can mean a lot of different things. And obviously, Jordan's impact off the court was gigantic. You just described it, Jay Will, in so many different ways. His role in the growth of the sport. But there are a lot of other ways you can positively be an impact off the floor. And I don't know that LeBron got enough credit for that as you look at these responses.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so Jordan basically started Nike basketball. I mean, that's an incredible thing. He was the leader of the Dream Team, which transformed worldviews of the NBA. LeBron doesn't have that on his resume, but my gosh, positive impact. I mean, I don't know if anybody watched on Saturday night the graduation ceremony that LeBron put together on all of the networks. If anybody's ever known the story of what he's done for kids in poverty, not only in his hometown, but in a lot of areas. I mean, there are no flies on LeBron for stuff he did off the court. That's what I mean by dragging him in. It's kind of hard to ask a question comparing Michael Jordan to anybody when you've just seen The Last Dance. But when it comes to LeBron's scenario, the resume is still pretty damn impressive.
You know, and I don't think it is a coincidence that Michael finally decided after all of these years to allow these films to be made. Because I think for the very first time, we all have seen now his legendary competitiveness. Jay Will, for the first time, I think he felt there was a legitimate contender to his throne. And he said, okay, all of you guys want to talk about how great LeBron is. Let's make sure you all remember who really was the best.
I agree. And we're talking about rarefied air here between these two. I know ESPN had a polling, one and number two of all time, Michael Jordan, LeBron James. But, you know, my thing, Greeny, is, and I did this little clip on IG the other day where I was talking about, you know, what's your leadership style? And I have a tendency to lean more towards the way LeBron James leads. If somebody was in my face talking trash to me every single day, was relentless, punching teammates in the face, you know, kind of talking down to people and was so myopic on winning. And I understand that to a degree, but I think you could win in another style and fashion. Yeah, we you've seen that. I mean, Bill Russell, you know, I won a college championship in another style and fashion. I didn't win 6 NBA titles, but it doesn't mean it can't be done. So if you have a affiliation with the way somebody leads, for me, watching the way LeBron James leads, even though people want to rip him and say he went to different teams, I don't really care. It's about how do you create a culture that is conducive to being impactful and winning at the same time. And that's why I have a tendency to lean more towards the way LeBron James has done it, more so than the way MJ has done it. One it doesn't take away from MJ's greatness. He's the greatest of all time for people. That's just me.
Look, the mere fact that we're having this conversation validates the greatness of them both. The final thought I would have on this is, if you read Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers, you recognize the significance of timing as well. Michael Jordan was able to start all of these things specifically because they hadn't yet started. LeBron James came along at a time when all of the things that Michael Jordan did had already been done. Timing plays a huge role in all of this. It was sitting there for the taking. Great. Michael Jordan took it. That's taking nothing away from anyone. Guys, outstanding. Thank you. We're coming back with much, much more on Last Dance. Plus, there are other stories to get to this morning, including this. Mike Tomlin is one of three minority head coaches in the NFL. Have you heard how the league is trying to make their coaching staffs more representative? The question is, will it work? We'll talk about it, and we'll see how we do on this. Sneaky Hembo, this one's for Jay Will. Michael Jordan's one of two players to score 40 points in his final career playoff game. Who's the other? That's the question. The answer is next. Get up on ESPN.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
We're back on Get Up on this moment, this morning after the final episodes of Last Dance aired, and everyone is going to get to choose their Michael Jordan moment. Jay Williams, what's yours?
So in 1998, my high school coach told me, Greeny, that follow through equals legacy. His name was Mike Thompson. He's always talked to me about hold that follow through, hold that follow through. And then to see the last transaction of that play and how it related to Byron Russell and Jordan with that slightly his momentum taking him left and holding the follow through all the way through has forever cemented in my brain. Follow through equals legacy, my friend.
I love
that
it.
That cemented it.
Winds up being his last bucket ever as a Chicago Bull in his last playoff game. And so here's your question this morning, Jay Will. Michael's one of two players to score 40 in his final career playoff game. Who's the other?
Maybe, I don't know, Elgin Baylor, maybe?
It's a good answer. It's a good guess. But the actual answer is Kobe Bryant. Kobe scored 42 points
wow.
in Game 5 of the 2012 Western Conference semifinals against the Thunder. It proved to be his last ever playoff game. Wow. Jay Will, you'll be back with me coming up off the top wow. of the hour. We'll talk more about this. But there was another huge story in sports this weekend that I wanted to make sure we set aside some time for today. In a proposal aimed at tackling the NFL's diversity problem, the league is considering improving draft picks for teams that hire minority head coaches or general managers. Just three of the last 20 NFL head coaching hires were minorities. Two of the NFL's 32 general managers are minorities. And so here's the proposal. Teams will be able to improve their third-round selection by up to 16 picks if they hire a minority candidate, 10 for a GM, 6 for a head coach. A team will receive a fourth-round compensatory pick if they retain a minority quarterbacks coach after one season, and a team will receive a third-round compensatory pick if they have a minority candidate hired as GM or head coach on another team. So I bring my crew back in here. And Dan Graziano, I know that you have more on this, our insider. Dan, what more do you have on this as far as the planning behind it?
Yeah, the owners are having a conference call tomorrow to vote on these proposals. And the one that you cite where you would get an improvement of your third round draft pick for hiring a minority head coach and or GM is the most extreme, and I'm not sure it's going to get the 24 of 32 votes it needs to pass, but the fact that it's even on the table tells you the NFL is acknowledging that they have a problem that systemically they haven't been able to do anything about. So if you look a little deeper at what else they're proposing tomorrow, they're trying to ease restrictions on teams' ability to hire coordinators. Right now, a team can kind of freeze an assistant coach in place because of his title and not let him interview for a defensive or offensive coordinator position. They want to wipe that out. They want to incentivize the hiring of minority candidates for quarterback coach positions. So really, they're trying to restock the pipeline with different candidates. And then ideally, organically, you'd get to a point where the head coach pool would be more diverse and you wouldn't have to force things and incentivize people with draft picks to do it. But so I think those proposals have a better chance to pass than the one where you would just instantly improve your third round pick with that hire. But it's fascinating that they're going to that extreme and that they feel they need to.
As far as what is at least on the table for the moment, Marcus, what do you think of it?
The incentivized part for me, G, is harsh, and I'm gonna tell you, man, as a black man in this business playing the game as a player, most of your teammates are African American and most of your coaches are white and most of the people in the position of power are white men. So when I thought about this and when I heard it, I also said two things can be true, right? If this is the way to get more minority coaches an opportunity and put them in positions to be successful as far as coordinators, GMs, I had to check myself because some guys may be willing to accept that part of it. The other part is it's disheartening because you think about the long history of not only this country, but you think about the NFL and how it has looked with 32 owners being majority white. And you say to yourself, you really have to incentivize these guys in order for black guys to get hired as GMs and coaches and just not hired on merit. Not like you, there is a systemic problem, like Graz said, but there's also the cultural problem. And we all know what the elephant in the room is that these teams have been owned by white men and they have hired guys that look like them and they felt more comfortable hiring guys that look like them. And that's really what it boils down to. So to have to incentivize for African Americans to get jobs as general manager and head coaches is disheartening in 2020 in the NFL.
Dominique, what do you think?
I think this might have been an ingenious way for racial progress by the NFL because it's managed to bring everyone together in opposition of this plan. I don't think it's obviously just a proposal, so it's not a plan that they're going to implement just yet. But I think it is somewhat offensive to not only the potential candidates, but also to the guys who are running the teams. Like, they're saying that you will not be willing to make the right thing. You're not willing to do the right thing. You're not able to get past whatever biases you have without us essentially paying you and bribing you to do the right thing. It's a sad truth that we exist in the NFL right now, but I do think that we need to understand that NFL is not one person or one thing. There are people in NFL who are trying to figure out by any way they can how to get the decision makers in this league to do the right thing and go past their own prejudices and preconceived notions and get out of their own comfort zone and do the right thing and give people opportunities. It's sad that it's come to this. I do want to applaud the NFL for at least thinking of other ways to go about doing this, but it is unfortunate that the guys who are in power can't seem to get out of their own way and won't hire guys who have had tremendous success at coordinators and will skip over guys like that for guys who have had very little success.
I get it. It feels bad. I completely get that. The question is, nothing else that they have tried to this point seems to work. And if we are going to take them at their word that they genuinely want to come up with a way to make this better, Marcus, do we have a better idea? Because nothing else they've tried seems to have worked.
Gee, that's the hard part. And kind of that's what I was alluding to when I was talking about ultimately it's going to be a decision made by owners. And these owners have shown time and time again that that is not going to ever be the majority thought process in the NFL to hire black GMs and black head coaches. And what I will say is this, when you think about what you just said, what Dominique just said, I don't think the thought process is in the wrong place. I just think it's a reminder to guys like myself and Dominique and a lot of guys that's been around the league, especially covering it, is that you have to legitimately incentivize these guys to hire black coaches and GMs. That is the boiling point for everybody that I've had a conversation with about this. It should not have to be that way.
Yes, this is something that they're going to be voting on tomorrow, is my understanding. Let's set aside plenty of time this week to talk about this. I think it's very important. And today we have all of this Last Dance, but this is a story I think that requires a good deal more conversation. And we will here on Get Up. In the meantime, our look back at the greatest Monday Night Football games continues tonight with the Chiefs and the Broncos from week 4 of 2018. Patrick Mahomes, a thrilling primetime debut. This includes his left-handed pass. It's tonight, 8 Eastern on ESPN and on the ESPN app. Coming up, for 22 years, we've called it the flu game. Coming up, it turns out we may need to change the title.
You don't know why, you will next. Get up on ESPN.